Welcome back to NFL Rants and Raves. I'm Steven Miranda. On Tuesday, January 20th, 2015, episode 10.42, the Championship Recap Show, also known as the Oh My God, What in the World Did I Just See? What a crazy way to determine the two teams that will play in Super Bowl 49. A blowout win for one with a dash of controversy and a crazy come-from-behind win in an overtime game that had everything. The Super Bowl is set, and Richard Graves from Sky Sports News will join me a little bit later on in the show to recap both the NFC and AFC championship games. Plus, we'll take an early look at what's coming up in Arizona. I'll also discuss what's at stake with Deflategate. The Broncos have a new coach. The Colts had a horrible, horrible week, including a good old boy. And Doug Marrone has to settle for something less than expected. I'll tell you what that is. And sometimes it's just better to...
Don't believe the hype! Don't believe the hype!
That's right. Sometimes it's better to not believe the hype. So let's just chop it in and get it going. Continuing to bring American football to the world, it's Steven Miranda with NFL Rants and Raves. Welcome back to NFL Rants and Raves, people. Wherever in the world you are and however in the world you are listening to this show right now, whether podcast, download, streaming it, I appreciate you coming back and listening. What a weekend of football. The AFC and NFC championship games are in the books. We have our two teams playing in the Super Bowl as the New England Patriots will play the Seattle Seahawks. The Seahawks will be the home team, and the Patriots will be the visitor in Super Bowl 49 in Glendale, Arizona, home of the University of Phoenix Stadium, the popcorn, Jiffy Pop Popper Stadium that's out there in the desert. I'm excited. I get to leave here in just a few days. I will be in Arizona for the Pro Bowl, and then all week on Radio Row, and then Super Bowl, and I just cannot wait. I am going to guarantee you one thing, folks. I am going to bring you a ton of shows and a ton of interviews. I'm already starting to line them up. And there, I'm talking about interviews from people, all walks of life, celebrities, athletes, coaches, athletes from other sports. It's going to be a great time. Make sure that you're following and listening along, especially on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. I'm going to Instagram pictures and tweet out photos and have questions for you all to give to me while I am on Radio Row in Arizona. It's going to be very interesting because I'm going to be there solo all by myself. I'm going to be gathering guests, making the interviews, recording them, putting them up, and I'm even going to do a video when I have very, very big celebrities on guests and players with me there in Arizona. I'm very excited. If you can't tell, I'm very excited. We're going to be close enough where I'm just going to drive out to Arizona, pack up all the gear, and just head on out there. That's going to be fun. Later on in the show, Richard Graves from Sky Sports News is going to join me. We're going to break down the two games that, as we saw them, the NFC and AFC championship games. But first, I want to talk about one of my passions. You all know that I'm a big TV and movie buff. I like to watch stuff. Right now, Game of Thrones has got some big news. I found out today on Variety that Game of Thrones is going to show the final two episodes of last season, January 23rd through the 29th, on IMAX theaters. So you get to watch Game of Thrones on a huge, gigantic screen. And then after those two episodes, they will show you a preview of season 5. That's what I'm talking about. Game of Thrones, baby. It's going to be back in just a couple of months. But at the end of this month, you can watch it on the biggest of big screens. IMAX theaters, IMAX format. The shows have been digitally remastered to be played on that format. And I think those two episodes at the end of last season were awesome. So you can count me in to watch them on IMAX theater. I think if you're a fan of the show, you'd be crazy not to go and check them out on IMAX. I'm pretty excited about that as well. But first, it's on to NFL news. All right, then, NFL news. We'll start where the Denver Broncos have a new head coach. It is Gary Kubiak, who has joined John Elway to become the head coach of the Denver Broncos. Gary Kubiak, if you don't know, used to back up John Elway. John Elway was the quarterback of the Denver Broncos, and Kubiak was his backup. And now here he comes to coach the Denver Broncos. The Broncos kind of flew Kubiak and his wife in on a private jet. They landed in Denver, and he's being introduced as the head coach, and he is excited. How can he not? He's teaming up with his good pal, John Elway. My only question for Elway and the Denver Broncos is you let go of John Fox, who took your team into the playoffs in all four seasons that he was your head coach. In 2011, he did it with Tim freaking Tebow as quarterback. Yeah, they only finished 8-8 that year, but they won the division, they made it to the playoffs, they won a wild card game where they shocked Pittsburgh, right? They beat the Pittsburgh Steelers 29-23. Then they go up to New England and they get thrashed by the Patriots. In 2012, that's when you bring in Peyton Manning. Manning comes in. They do very well that season. They get into the playoffs. In the divisional round, they host the Baltimore Ravens and lose 38-35 on that crazy Torrey Smith catch over in the back, and they win. Baltimore wins the game. They go on to win the Super Bowl. Then in 2013, Peyton Manning again. This time, they make it all the way to the Super Bowl. Unfortunately, get thrashed by Seattle there in the Super Bowl. And then this year, they make the playoffs again, number two seed, but they get bounced in the divisional round by the Indianapolis Colts. So what I'm saying is that this guy has been your coach for 4 years, and for 4 years, with whatever pieces you provided him, he took you to the playoffs, and it wasn't good enough. Now John Fox is going to go coach the Chicago Bears. The Bears have their guy now. In comes Kubiak. And all I'm saying, if you're going to blow up the team at the coaching level, as the Denver Broncos did, you have to bring in someone who is going to not only be the guy, but be better than the guy you had before. And I'm not sure Kubiak, with whatever staff he decides to bring in there in Denver, is going to be better than Fox. Now we don't know, is Peyton Manning going to retire? Maybe this is a sign that the Denver Broncos are trying to ease Peyton Manning out the door. We don't know. John Elway has publicly said that he wants Peyton Manning to return, but we're not sure. I mean, how is Kubiak and Manning going to work together? Who's going to be the offensive coordinator? Is it going to be a guy that's going to be able to work with Peyton Manning and the type of style that Peyton Manning likes to work, where he is the guy in the huddle and pretty much kind of calls his own stuff? Or are they going to bring someone who's going to try and make sure that Peyton Manning does it the way he wants? And is Peyton Manning even going to come back? There's a lot of question marks now for the Denver Broncos. Plus, they got a lot of free agents that they got to deal with signing, whether they're going to bring them back or not. I wish Gary Kubiak all the best, but I'm not sure how you go and replace a guy who has taken you to four straight playoffs with whatever pieces you've given him, and he's made it work. He's made you a winner. Sure, you haven't gotten the Super Bowl ring that you thought you were going to get, but it's hard to win Super Bowls in the National Football League. Everybody tells you that week in and week out. It is very difficult to do that. So good luck, Gary Kubiak. I'll tell you what, if Kubiak does not
get Peyton Manning to come back for him next year, I think the Broncos are an 8-8 or worse football team with Brock Osweiler throwing the rock for the Broncos. That's my two takes there, but Gary Kubiak in at for Denver. Now let's talk about real quickly before we get to the Indianapolis Colts and how horrible they were on the football field in the AFC Championship game against the New England Patriots. Let's talk about the horrible week that they had last week. Before the game was even played, Trent Richardson with the whole, "I will never get benched again," and then he doesn't even make the trip because they cite personal reasons. Then they have a good old boy, and let's just give it to him.
Just a good old boy, never meaning no harm.
You know the dude never means no harm.
Beats all you never saw, been in trouble with the law since the day he was born.
Linebacker Josh McNary. Now, Josh was placed on the commissioner's exempt list. He was charged with rape the Wednesday prior to the AFC Championship game. Not only was it charged for rape, it was also a charge for criminal confinement with bodily injury and battery resulting in bodily injury from an incident that happened back on December 1st of last year. Now, he entered a plea of not guilty. However, the Indianapolis Colts said that after reviewing the supporting documents that were filed against Josh, the Colts requested that Commissioner Goodell immediately place Josh on the commissioner's exempt list, which he did. So that's something that they had to deal with midweek as they're getting ready to play the New England Patriots. And it just kind of spiraled out of control. They never seemed to get a good week of practice where they stayed out of the news for bad reasons. And then obviously, of course, I think that carried on into Sunday where they had a horrible game. And we'll talk about that a little bit later. But Josh McNary now, look, he was a linebacker. He wasn't a starter, but he was a good backup. And he was their primary, he was a primary special teams player that, you know, he made a difference out there on the football field when he was playing on special teams. And it doesn't matter. At that point in this particular time when you're getting ready to play one of the biggest games of the year, you just don't want any distractions like that. And so that was pretty bad for the Indianapolis Colts and McNary there. We'll see how that plays out with the commissioner. Finally, the final piece of news. Doug Marrone, you remember that guy, used to coach the Buffalo Bills. Well, let's just say that he has overplayed his hand. Ouch. He is the coach who decided to opt out of Buffalo. Remember, he was the head coach of the Buffalo Bills. He had just done two seasons. He was going into his third season. But he saw there's a whole lot of coaching opportunities out there. Atlanta, Chicago, Denver, lots of head offensive coordinator jobs out there. And he just really thought that maybe he wasn't happy in Buffalo and it was time for him to move on. Nobody else saw it that way. I think in the National Football League, owners like to see a little bit of loyalty. Yeah, owners may not be loyal to players and coaches, but they like to see it in return. And when Marrone decided to bail from Buffalo, other owners just took a look at him and said, maybe you're not the guy. You're not the guy that's going to stick around through thick and thin. And so nobody hired him. So now he's decided to sign on with the Jacksonville Jaguars, as the Jaguars' official team website has posted that Marrone has accepted the job of offensive line coach. He will also be tagged with assistant head coach duties. So there you go. This is a guy who was making some pretty serious bank as the head coach for Buffalo and for not even have an OC job coming out of leaving the Bills leads you to think that he just overplayed his hand. He thought he had a much better position to get one of these other openings that was available. But sometimes, as I said earlier,
don't believe the hype. Don't believe the hype.
don't believe the hype. You just don't believe. He believed his own hype, and it just wasn't good enough. So there you go. But at least he's making a whole heck of a lot of money that the Buffalo Bills just paid him. So he'll have that to keep him company while he is the assistant coach and offensive lineman coach for the Jacksonville Jaguars. That's Doug Marrone. Well, it's that time to get ready for Super Bowl, and the only way you get to Super Bowl is if you finish the AFC and NFC championship game. As promised earlier in the show, joining me right now, my big man, Sky Sports News very own Richard Graves. What's up, Gravesy?
Great to see you again, Steve. It's been, what, 10 days, 2 weeks since we last saw each other, and it feels like an eternity, especially with the weather over here in the UK. I'm told it's going to be snowing here tonight.
Snowing?
2 centimetres of snow, nearly an inch of snow is forecast tonight. And 4 days' time, obviously, we're going to meet up in Phoenix again. I hear it's in the 60s, touching 70s over there, about 22 degrees Celsius. It cannot come quickly enough.
Yeah, it's going to be very warm. It's warm here. You left the minute you left Los Angeles. The temperature raised like 10 degrees Fahrenheit. So you left, it was like in the 50s, low 60s. And then by the time you were in San Francisco, I had like 70-degree weather. It's very nice.
Man, you told me that all year round, the sun shines in California. I can only go on what my own eyes told me. And that day we went to Disneyland, Winnie the Pooh had a big icicle coming off his nose. It was freezing.
It was kind of cold at Disneyland. It was great. I love the shot of you and Catherine over by Walt Disney's statue and the castles in the background, but the skies are just full of clouds and gray.
Now, we had a great time, and thanks very much to you and Trisha and the family for putting us up for a few days. We had an excellent time, a brilliant few days away on holiday, vacation. So, yeah, no, it's brilliant. Thank you very much.
Well, my house is your house. Mi casa su casa, buddy. Anytime, we'd love to have you. That was a lot of fun. You did, by chance, I'm going to have to throw you under the bus here for all the listeners to listen. You left a Bart in my daughter's room. What's that all about?
Well, you know, traditionally, when a friend shows good hospitality, you'd like to leave them a little gift. Well, in this case, it was about a 4-foot-high Bart Simpson toy, because we went to Universal Studios.
Yeah.
I played that can game where you've got some beanbags to knock down these cans. And it's different over here. You've got 3 bags to knock all the cans down once. Over at Universal, you get about 6 beanbags, and you've got to knock them down twice. Final throw, need one more, knock it all off. There was big celebrations, but unfortunately, I couldn't take Bart with me. He'd have required another seat on the plane, and I'm a Yorkshireman. I'm just not going to pay for that.
You're just not going to pay for a Bart Simpson seat. No, thank you very much. My daughters love him. He is up. he is getting a great seat in our home, so thanks again for coming. We had a lot of fun, bud. So let's get to it. We're going to recap here the NFC and AFC championship games. We'll start in the Pacific Northwest, where the Seattle Seahawks shocked the world in one of the biggest comebacks in franchise history, playing the Green Bay Packers in Seattle. They were just awful for 55 minutes. Awful, awful football, and they somehow managed to win in the end. Give us your take, man.
Well, if you're a football purist, it wasn't the game for you. In the first half, both sides are turning over the ball. We'd heard the week before how Aaron Rodgers has gone the whole season, way back to 2013, without throwing an interception at Lambeau Field. He threw 2 picks inside the first half of football in Seattle. But Russell Wilson, he couldn't complete a pass for the first quarter. I think we were 2 minutes into the second quarter before he actually got himself into positive yardage. And you talk about the way Seattle as a team played. Well, through 55 minutes, I saw a stat that said Russell Wilson had a quarterback passer rating of 7.
7.
And then for the rest of the game, the remaining 5 minutes and 3 minutes or whatever it was of overtime, his passer rating was 158.3, the very best it can be. And you hear how Seattle play for each other. They buy into Pete Carroll's philosophy of never quit, never give in, leave no doubt. That's the mantra up there in Seattle. They left it all on the field on Sunday. It was astonishing. It really was.
3 minutes, 19 seconds into overtime, Russell Wilson hits Jermaine Kearse with a beautiful pass to give Seattle the win, an improbable win over the Green Bay Packers. Let's just get you to that, to overtime, first of all. Here it is. It's halftime. The Green Bay Packers are winning 60-0. Everybody's like, what in the world is going on with Seattle? And I'm like, look, I've got Seattle in this football game, but all along I've said the Seattle Seahawks offense is not that great. They will get it done, but they're just not great. I don't know if they can come back from 16 points down. Then the second half starts. They're still not doing all that well. They score a touchdown on a fake field goal. That just crazy. The punter throws the ball to big, huge offensive linemen, and the first touchdown the Seattle Seahawks score is on a fake play from the punter. And I'm just like, wow. It's going to take tricks now for Seattle to win this football game. Then we have now 16-7. Green Bay goes on to kick a field goal to make it 19-7. There's about 5 minutes and change left. Seattle's last gasp effort going down the field. Russell Wilson throws his fourth interception of the game, and all of a sudden you're like, game over. The Green Bay defender actually gives himself up. He slides. Everybody thinks it's over. Everybody thought it was over except for Seattle.
Well, I've got to tell you, I don't know what the media reaction has been like over there in the States, but this week I've heard the game broken down, and Burnett, who got that final pick, has taken a lot of heat over here for falling down and not trying to gain extra yardage. But I've seen the coach's film back only this afternoon, and you clearly see Julius Peppers about 15 yards upfield motioning it to him to fall down, protect the ball, don't do anything stupid. And when you're up by the scoreline they were at that stage and you've got possession of the ball, just over 5 minutes to go, look, that is not the only play in the game that cost the Green Bay Packers. You can look at Bostic for trying to catch the ball instead of doing his assignment and blocking in front of Jordy Nelson. You can look at Ha-Ha Clinton-Dix on the two-point conversion for just watching the ball land in the receiver's hands instead of going and making a play on it. There were any number of moments in that game when Green Bay could have seized the moments. And you look at history as well. And history does not lie. No team in the history of the playoffs of the NFL has ever trailed by 16 at halftime and come back to win that game. How many teams have turned the ball over five times in any game, not just the playoffs, and then gone on to win that game? These things, it's lightning in a bottle, and this Seattle Seahawks team at the moment have got the lightning in the bottle.
They do, and you're right. I do not blame Burnett for going down at all. I think it was a smart move. You make the interception. Let's not get into any trouble. And I think he did. It was good for him.
Well, let's just go back to the wild card weekend round of the playoffs. You remember that Dallas Cowboys-Detroit Lions game when the Lions are driving inside the final 2 minutes and Matt Stafford fumbles the ball, DeMarcus Lawrence falls on it, tries to run with it, fumbles, and returns possession to the Detroit Lions?
Yes.
What was everybody saying at that instant? Lawrence should not be trying to make a play. He should just secure possession. That's what Burnett essentially did in that situation on Sunday.
Yeah, he is not to blame at all. I think he made the right choice. After that, though, Green Bay couldn't do anything. I think they got far too conservative. They punted the ball away. Seattle gets the ball back with about three and change. They march down the field. Boom, boom, boom. Marshawn Lynch, a little pass out of the backfield. It looks like he scores, but they call it back. They said he stepped out of bounds. Russell Wilson then runs it in, 19-14. We got ourselves a ball game. There's 2 minutes and change left. Here comes the onside kick, and you touched on it. Bostic, out of nowhere, his assignment is the block, and he decides, the football's coming right to me. I'm going to get this. It goes off his hands, hits his chest, bounces into the air. Matthews is right there to recover the football for Seattle. First down, Seattle ball with 2 minutes left. And you're like, oh my God, this could be, this could happen. Talk
Look,
to me.
I know Bostic will be beating himself up over this, but in the cold light of day, I've got to ask the question, what on earth was going through his mind? You've got Jordy Nelson, arguably the best hands in this Green Bay Packers team, right there behind him, ready to go up and get a ball. Instead, Bostic stops, he sees glory for a second, and you look how much height Stephen Hauschka got on that onside kick. Whoever goes to claim the ball for Green Bay has got to expect to get drilled, and I think that's what happened. Bostic decides he's going to go for it. I'm not even sure the ball ever touches his fingers and hits him square in the face mask. Jordy Nelson can't get anywhere near it because Bostic's in his way. And before you know it, Seattle pounce on the ball. The 12th man is going berserk inside that stadium. And from then on, you felt it was really on. The improbable was going to become probable. And I remember that drive in overtime, literally when they completed the play, before the game-clinching touchdown, I texted Richard Smith, who's going to be out there in Phoenix with us this coming week for the Super Bowl. I said, this is over. I said, Seattle are not going to allow Green Bay to get back on the field. And what do you know? A few seconds later, boom, Jermaine Kearse, touchdown, game over.
That's exactly what happened. I actually even tweeted as soon as it happened. I'm like, shouldn't players on the hands teams actually have hands? I mean, what were you doing? And if your job was to block, what are you even thinking going up for the football in the first place?
And bear in mind, Bostic is what? The third string tight end on the Green Bay Packers depth chart? Wow. It's such a huge moment in the game. And I've heard other people talk about it, given as well as Green Bay played exceptionally well in the first half, obviously. I think the final quarter of that game, the occasion, the moment got too much for the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah.
And if you think right back to the start of the season, this Packers team were many people's tips for the Super Bowl. Their quarterback is Aaron Rodgers, arguably the MVP in the league this season. Who would have thought you'd get to a situation where the Packers lead by 16, lead by 12, and then, quite frankly, blow it?
Yeah, they did blow it. The final score in overtime after the Jermaine Kearse touchdown, 28-22. It was 22-22 after the end of regulation, because even after Marshawn Lynch scored that 24-yard touchdown to give the Seahawks the lead, and then miraculously Russell Wilson just floats the ball up there, the ball up in the air, what seems like eternity. Ha-ha, Clinton Dix couldn't make a play on it, and they go up by three. I said to myself, there's too much time. There's too much time. Aaron Rodgers, this is far from over. And sure enough, Green Bay goes down. They kick a game-tying field goal. Could have been a game-winning field goal had they stopped that two-point conversion. But they at least forced overtime. Once again, though, we got to look at overtime. The fact that Green Bay and Aaron Rodgers never had a chance to get on that football field. You got to feel for them, because after they played so hard, yeah, they gave up the lead. They forced overtime. They managed to get in field goal range, but you never get on the field again. That's just
it's a killer. It's a killer. But far from just focusing on the Green Bay Packers, I really don't think enough credit has been given to Russell Wilson. Sure, in the aftermath of the game, people said, wow, didn't he play well? But everything since then, when people have analysed it, have been, what happened to the Green Bay Packers? Well, what about Russell Wilson? You've thrown four interceptions. I'm pretty confident that's the worst game he's had, be it in college or certainly at pro level. He's never had a game like that. Two of the interceptions have come off tipped balls intended for Jermaine Kearse.
Right.
And here you go in overtime. You're on around the 35, 36-yard line, Green Bay's side of the field. And this time you see Kearse get streaking down the middle of the field. You pull back the trigger and you hit him inch perfect, because Tramon Williams was all over him. How the flag never came out for pass interference was beyond me. He was hanging off Jermaine Kearse, but Wilson finds him with a pinpoint ball and Kearse holds it in. Game over.
So it's weird that side of the bracket in the NFC, you have Detroit losing to Dallas with, you know, everybody the question. And then you have Dallas losing to Green Bay, and there's the question about the Dez Bryant catch. And then you have Green Bay losing to Seattle in this kind of fashion. So I ask you, Gravesy, how would you like to lose in the playoffs? Would you like to lose the way Dallas lost on a questionable call, or would you like to lose the way Green Bay lost, you're winning the entire game, and you lose it in the end in overtime?
Quite frankly, I wouldn't like to lose. How's that for an answer? No, you don't want to lose in the playoffs, but I've got to tell you, when you have the game, you've punched your ticket to Phoenix, to the Super Bowl, and then you don't get on the plane, quite frankly.
Yeah.
That is what has happened to the Green Bay Packers. They had the game won. It was over. And I don't think you can sum up in words how some of those players will be feeling, because this game is going to haunt them throughout the entire offseason, and in some cases, they will never forget it. I don't think Aaron Rodgers, even when he's sat in his armchair and is an old man smoking his pipe, will forget this game. This will always be the one that got away.
Yeah, and it's funny. I'm reading countless of tweets from people saying, Packers in the Super Bowl. This is the way the Packers are getting to the Super Bowl, by thrash in Seattle. The Packers are punching their ticket to the Super Bowl. There were so many tweets of people already putting the Packers in the Super Bowl. Guess what? That's why they play 60 minutes in the NFL. You got to play the whole game. That game was amazing. So anyways, there, the final 28-22 in overtime. Seattle with a massive come-from-behind victory. And Joey's not here, so I won't play it. The fans had decided to take Joey's pick of Green Bay over my pick of Seattle. They made it the challenge game. It's official. I am now the challenge game champion. I have won 11-9. There's only one game left, so the fans cannot catch me. If Joey were here, I would play I Am the Smartest Man Alive. But since he's not, I'm going to let it slide.
Let me stop you right there, because I listened to last week's podcast previewing these games.
Okay.
And you had Nacho's picks going up against yours. Since when did you receive somebody's picks and then say, right, we're going to throw it open to the fans? This is unprecedented.
I said that.
And ultimately, you've allowed the fans to sabotage their own chances. Nacho never got a look in.
Did I or did I not in the podcast say, if you want Joey's picks to take Nacho's, send an email, tweet us on Twitter, post on Facebook. Are you ready for this? I got an overwhelming majority, more than 4-1, that said, go with Joey's picks over Nacho's. I wanted to go with Nacho's picks, but no, everybody was like, go with Joey's, go with Joey's. We went with Joey's, and it was not to be.
I've got to intervene here and use the term us fans, because I've put my picks against you all year as well, so I'm comfortable with that. And sometimes the fans need protecting from themselves. When I was listening to that podcast last week, because I had the same picks as you and Nacho, Seattle and New England, and I was like, no, don't let this happen. Stick with them. We might be one down going into the Super Bowl, but at least we're still going to the Super Bowl. And now it's over.
Now it is over. It is over. Like I said, I won't take the time to play I Am the Smartest Man Alive, but I am. So we'll just let it slide with that. And thanks for putting your picks up. That's really great. I'll tell you what, if you want, just you and I, we can go mano a mano, one-on-one, with our Super Bowl picks, because I have a hunch, a slight hunch, we are going to differ on that game, buddy.
Well, I will tell you flat out right now, I haven't written my preview for Sky Sports yet, but I picked at the start of the season the Seattle Seahawks to repeat. I see no reason at all why that should change. When that preview comes out next Tuesday or Wednesday, it will say, I take the Seattle Seahawks to win Super Bowl 49.
Wow, look at that. He is sticking with his original preseason pick. That's awesome. Good for you. I may be right there with you. I don't know yet. I honestly have not made a decision just yet on that game.
Well, I'm intrigued because anytime we've had a small wager between ourselves, it's because I've taken the New England Patriots and you just steadfastly refuse to be associated with them. So if we're going to go mono a mono, this means that you're going to tuck tail and renege on everything you've said all season long.
Don't
you even think the Patriots would manage to pip the Dolphins for the East title in the AFC.
Don't say that to New England Patriots fans, man. I'm already getting a lot of heat from Patriots fans, okay? Simply because I reported what everybody else was reporting, that, you know, they were being investigated for deflating footballs. That's all I said, and people were like, "What?" I'm like, I'm just reporting what other people are saying. Come on.
Did you see the tweet from Rob Gronkowski today relating to that?
That was classic. So why don't we get to that? The AFC Championship game where the New England Patriots hosted the Indianapolis Colts. And my goodness, after the game we had just seen, didn't this just stink? I mean, wasn't it just awful?
Well, it was always going to be a tough ask, wasn't it, to live up to all the action we'd just seen moments before in the NFC Championship game. I don't think anybody could have expected this one to rival that for drama and excitement. But from the moment that the Patriots went 14-0 up at Gillette Stadium, given the Colts' previous record, certainly Andrew Luck's previous three games, he'd gone 0-3 against Tom Brady and the Patriots. And I myself, midway through the second quarter, thought this game is just over. Now, credit to the Colts. They got an interception, managed to pull one score back, but that was as good as it got all night long in Foxborough for the Indianapolis Colts, who on the day, it was just one game too many for them. Credit to them. They went to Denver last week and won, but they couldn't do it against Tom Brady and the Patriots, who just outclassed them.
Yeah, it was simply too much to ask for the Indianapolis Colts to not only beat Peyton Manning and the Broncos, but then have to beat Tom Brady and the Patriots. I am going to point to one play here, though, that I think changed this game. The game was 14-7, all right? It's a 7-point lead for the Patriots. There's about a minute and 40 seconds left to go. The Patriots are driving, and the Indianapolis Colts get hit for a roughing the passer call on Tom Brady, where Freeney hit Brady in the chest. He put his face mask right between Brady's 1 and 2, and there's roughing the passer. And that allows the Patriots to then go down and score a touchdown right before the half. I mean, they actually wound up having to settle for a field goal right before half to make it 17-7. But still, they were able to get points on a roughing the passer penalty that even Rich Eisen, who is the face of NFL Network, tweeted, "That was a horrible roughing the passer call." I just, you know, that is a call that I think in the future maybe needs to get reviewed, because Brady's head went back, but the defender never touched his head.
Look, I absolutely agree with you. As a defensive player, I don't really know what more you have to do. He's hit Brady smack in the middle of the chest. I heard during the game the explanation given was that the defensive player didn't raise his head to look where he led with the helmet down. And I was like, wow, if that's really what you're calling and basing such a huge penalty on in that context of the game, it's very difficult to play defense, I've got to tell you. Whether it was a turning point in the game or not, I think on the night New England with that dominance, LeGarrette Blount ran the ball in such a fashion that Indianapolis all night long didn't come close to stopping him. They were missing tackles. Brady would hit them then with the odd pass thrown in here or there. Whether that decision is given or that flag gets picked up, I don't think it makes any difference to the final outcome of that game.
Yeah, it was the third quarter. I mean, if you're going to look at the end of this game, the third quarter is where really it all just kind of got away from Indianapolis. The third quarter was awful. They got outscored 21-0 in that quarter, and it was over. Midway through the third quarter, I was like, I know we just saw what we just saw in Seattle, but people, this is over, man. It was just bad news for the Colts. They had no no answer, literally, to stopping the Patriots. The Patriots were able to do just about anything at will. And so even though I said, yeah, even though there's this deflate gate and people are trying to find out and the NFL is investigating whether balls were deflated or not, that's irrelevant. They straight out beat down the Colts. The Colts got what we call a blank whooping, okay?
Let's put it into context. It's the biggest margin of defeat in a AFC Championship game since way back in 1990.
Yeah.
You know, this is the magnitude of the victory that New England enjoyed on the night. And it's also why I think the Super Bowl this year is a really intriguing game. I remember we both spoke before the game in New Jersey last year when I took the Seahawks on that occasion, you took the Broncos. But I felt that there was an obvious differential between the two teams.
Right.
This year you go into this game and the New England Patriots like to take away what the opposition does best.
Yeah.
Well, on Sunday night, they shut down the receiving core for Andrew Luck. Well, can you say there's an out-and-out number one receiver for Seattle? No. I think most people would argue that their very best receiver is probably no more than a two or three on most other NFL teams' depth charts. So do you take away Marshawn Lynch? Well, if you do that and shut him down, who's going to spy Russell Wilson, who will scramble and cause you problems? So whilst this Seahawks offense isn't an explosive offense, it's certainly going to pose questions and problems for the New England defense. And then on the other side of the ball, it's okay saying Richard Sherman shuts down one half of the field, but Rob Gronkowski lines up out wide. He lines up in the slot. They move him into an orthodox tight end position. Who covers him then? Does Cam Chancellor take responsibility for him? Or does Bobby Wagner follow him downfield? And then you've got their running game as well, which is a little bit different to how everyone else runs the ball. And Tom Brady's release is so quick. Whereas 12 months ago, the pass rush for Seattle got to Peyton Manning. I'm not so sure that they can get to Tom Brady before he gets the ball out. So there's a real chess match that's going to go on both sides of the ball, and I think it makes for an intriguing encounter.
It is going to be a great game. I mean, so much so that the line opened, and it's a pick 'em. Okay, Las Vegas is saying, I don't know who's going to win this football game. Let's just see where the money starts coming in, and then we'll move the line accordingly. It's a pick 'em. They don't know. Okay, so that means it's going to be just – whoever wins is going to win. It's going to be a good football game. That we guarantee you. But what I like about the Seattle defense, and we'll get more into this later on as we start giving our predictions for the Super Bowl, is that the Seattle defense says, this is our base defense. Here's how we set up. And we don't care whether, A, you run the football, B, you throw the football, B, you utilize a tight end, two tight ends. We don't care. These are our guys. We think our guys are better than your guys, and we're going to stop you regardless of what you try to do. And that's where I think it's advantage Seahawks that, yeah, like we said, the Patriots come out. They came out a few weeks ago, throw the ball, throw the ball, throw the ball. Wow. Now they come out this week. They pound it with LeGarrette Blount, 40 rushes, pow. And you don't know what's going to happen. And Seattle's like, we don't care what you try to do. We're just going to stop you. Whatever it is you try to do, we're going to stop it. And I think that's the beauty of it. So, yeah, they may not get to Tom Brady, but they may not have to, because the one thing they did against the Denver Broncos last year in the Super Bowl, the Denver Broncos were so good at throwing those short passes, and the receivers were able to break for, you know, 5, 6, 10, 15-yard gains after the catch. Well, Seattle stopped that. They're like, you can catch that 3-yard pass, but you know what? It's a 3-yard pass. That's all you're getting. And if they can do that to New England and they could stop all those short 2-3-yard passes that Tom Brady pass throws and not let any yards after the catch, they will dominate as well.
Well, I agree. And I keep going back to that second series, that second drive of Super Bowl 48 that the Denver Broncos had, and that crossing route that Demaryius Thomas ran, and Cam Chancellor just blew him up. Now, the way New England are made up offensively these days, they don't have a deep threat as such. So any passes that that Tom Brady's going to make, unless it's Rob Gronkowski going down the seam, it's going to be short stuff underneath to the Danny Amendolas, the Julian Edelmans in their team. Well, I've got to tell you, Bobby Wagner, Cam Chancellor, Richard Sherman, Byron Maxwell, they're going to eat that up all day. So if the New England Patriots are going to have success, they've got to be able to run the ball and run it effectively. On the other side of the ball, Vince Wilfork anchoring down this New England Patriots defensive line is going to be key for me if they're going to have success, because it's going to come down to him to stuff up the running holes and contain Marshawn Lynch, push him to the outside. If New England can't do that, then the whole of the offensive game plan opens up for Seattle. If they can run the ball effectively on New England, they can cause them problems in every facet of the game.
So I want to give you this one stat before I let you go, Richard. Over the last 12 Super Bowls on the AFC side, 11 of those Super Bowls were quarterbacked by either Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, or Ben Roethlisberger.
It's incredible, isn't it?
Three QBs, 11 Super Bowls. That 12th Super Bowl was when Joe Flacco and the Baltimore Ravens beat the San Francisco 49ers. But otherwise, it's been Brady, Manning, or Roethlisberger in the AFC.
And this is why it's another reason why it's a fascinating game, because this will be Tom Brady's sixth Super Bowl appearance, which in itself is remarkable. He's won three, of course, back a decade ago now, the last time he lifted the Vince Lombardi trophy. But are we going to see a passing of the torch? Because Russell Wilson has been nothing short of phenomenal since he was drafted by the Seattle Seahawks, confounding all his critics, leading them, of course, to the Super Bowl last year. And you look at the Seahawks team now, they had a swagger before the NFC Championship game on Sunday. Imagine how big the confidence is in that dressing room. We can turn over the ball five times against the number one point scoring team in the NFL this season, and we still win the game. Wow, I've got to tell you, for that reason and that reason alone, momentum is a huge thing it come playoff time, and that is why I'd like to be in the Seattle Seahawks dressing room.
Confidence will be high. Confidence will be high. And you got to think about this. And once again, for my Patriots fans that are out there listening, I am not saying anything negative about your team, but I'm just stating a fact that since the New England Patriots were found guilty of spying, they have yet to win a Super Bowl. They've gotten to there a couple times, but they did not win it. That's just fact. Here's the chance for them to prove everybody wrong. We've gotten to our sixth Super Bowl. Now they've got to win it without any of that other controversy that surrounded them in the past.
Well, look, everybody's going to talk about who will be the X factor for which team come game time. And usually you look for somebody that plays on the periphery. Well, on this occasion, the X factor for the New England Patriots, for me at least, is tight end Rob Gronkowski. When they were last there in Indianapolis and they played the New York Giants, he was hobbling around on one foot. He wasn't fit. He wasn't even in the 2007 Super Bowl when they lost to the New York Giants in Arizona. So he holds the key to this whole offensive game plan for me. If Tom Brady can hit him, if he can have success, then that opens up everything else, both underneath and with the running game for the New England Patriots. And that is really what they've got to look at, I think, because you look all over the field and there are players who are game changers for their teams. You look at Richard Sherman and Darrell Revis. You look at LeGarrette Blount. You look at Marshawn Lynch. You look at two very different quarterbacks, of course, in Russell Wilson and Tom Brady. But equally as important, this will be a big story over the next 10 days or so, will be the fitness of Richard Sherman, but arguably for me, defensively in this game, the most important person on the field for the Seattle Seahawks, and that'll be their safety, Earl Thomas. Dislocated his shoulder in the game against Green Bay on Sunday, came back in, played the rest of the game. He's got 10 days to get himself fit, ready to go, because his coverage skills, sideline to sideline from that safety position, are going to be key to stop Tom Brady.
Yeah, I think, you know what, he came back into that football game, which leads me to believe there's no way he's missing the Super Bowl. Same goes for Sherman. They will be there. They will be ready to go. Even if they're dinged up a little bit, they're still going to be better than most. Richard, thank you very much for coming on, man. I really appreciate it. There you go. AFC Championship game, the final there, 45-7. It was never in doubt. There was never any question who it was going to be. But now we've got Patriots in Seattle, Super Bowl 49, Arizona. We will be there in less than 7 days. Looking forward to seeing you again, buddy.
I can't wait. It should be a classic. And we get to hook up again.
That's right. We will. Steaks and beer.
Honestly, it's the first place we're going when we land on Saturday. Find me a steakhouse, give me a drink, sleep off the jet lag, and let's be ready to go Sunday morning.
There you go. All right, folks, that was Richard Grace from Sky Sports News. We will be coming to you from Radio Row later on as the Super Bowl gets closer to give you our official predictions. Now, before I leave you, I'm just going to say this about the whole investigation that the NFL is doing of the New England Patriots for deflating footballs. I've said it to many friends. I've said it to Nacho. I've said it to Katie. There is no way that whatever it is that comes out had anything to do with the fact that the Indianapolis Colts got manhandled. They were beat down, destroyed. It was a butt whooping, a good old-fashioned butt whooping, 45-7. There is no getting around that. They got whooped. I just don't like that it always has to be something shady with the Patriots. There's always something going on underneath and allowed, whether this is true or not. The fact that one of the balls, according to one of the equipment managers for the Indianapolis Colts, after the interception the Colts had, that ball come over to the sideline. They were going to go give it in. They're kind of looking at it like, hey, man, this is a little light. So much so that the officials had to take it in and weigh it. So I don't know what investigation is going to happen. I think it's going to be much ado about nothing. They're really not going to find anything, I don't think, even if that one particular ball was below weight and it was deflated. I don't think they could do anything because they're not going to be able to prove that anybody from the Patriots did something to that football. But that being said, I hate that there's always an allegation, and it reminds me of the South Park episode where Cartman is playing the role of James Edward Olmos.
This is Bill Belichick, coach of the New England Patriots. He's won 3 Super Bowls. How? He cheated. He even got caught cheating. And nobody cares. Bill Belichick proved that in America it's okay to cheat. As long as you cheat your way to the top.
And nobody cared. That's what I feel. I think Patriots fans are like, we don't care. If you're not cheating, you're not trying. Just go out there and try to do something to win. Get your team the advantage. There is getting teams the advantage. Like, you know what? You go out and it's windy, and the wind is going from north to south. So you're like, you know what? I want the wind in my back in the second and fourth quarters. That's taking the advantage of the field and the weather situations. That's okay. Deflating a football because your quarterback likes to throw an underinflated football in wet weather, that's not okay, all right? Those are rules that you're breaking. Once again, we don't know what happened, and probably nobody even knows if the balls were deflated or not if Tom Brady doesn't throw an interception. But the fact is that the league has to investigate it. That's bad enough right there to begin with, all right? It's just there's an investigation about your team again. And I was talking to Joey, actually, hey, Joey, just remember, buddy, that when you're talking to me about football, wherever you are, whatever it is you're doing, just remember this, bud.
I am the smartest man alive!
Just remember that. But I'm talking to Joey about it, and he's like, I think all the teams do it. All the teams are out there cheating, trying to get an advantage. And I'm like, Joey, if all 32 teams are doing it, how come the only team that continually gets caught is the Patriots? The odds of that are crazy, right? The odds are that if they're all cheating, other teams are going to get caught too, not just the Patriots. Come on, man. It's just there's always something shady, and people hate it, but that's why I make them hear. Regardless of what happens, we'll find out in 2 to 3 days. That's what the NFL says. It's taking a couple more days to finish up their investigation. We'll have to see what happens. But like I said, it's going to be much ado about nothing. I'm not sure they're going to be able to prove anything. And so we have it. The stage is set. New England at Seattle. Patriots at Seahawks. Brady, Wilson, Sherman, Darrell Revis. We got a whole host of big names. Super Bowl 49 is set. I will be there all week, and I hope that you are there joining me as I upload all the good stuff that I do throughout the week. Once again, wherever you are, thank you very much for continuing to listen to NFL Rants and Raves. Earlier with me, Richard Graves from Sky Sports News. Like to thank him for coming on the show. I'm Steven Miranda, and we've been listening to NFL Rants and Raves. I'm out.